This is Beersmith episode number 122, and I have the legendary Jake Keeler and Michael Dawson together today for one show only. They'll be talking about trends in homebrewing and what's new in homebrewing ingredients.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 122. It is late March 2016, and I'm happy to have Jake Keeler and Michael Dawson as my special guests today, talking about ingredients. Thank you to this week's sponsor, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. You get six amazing issues this year, packed with information for brewers and beer fans. They're offering a new discount code now, which gives you 15% off everything they sell, including subscriptions and training. The new code is BeerSmith2016. I encourage you to check out this great new magazine for homebrewers at beerandbrewing.com and use the offer code BeerSmith2016 to get your 15% discount today. And also Anvil. Amazing kettles, burners, and accessories to help you forge the perfect beer. Anvil is a new line of brewing equipment from Blickman Engineering and endorsed by brewing author John Palmer. Anvil is durable, reliable, a quality line of brewing equipment that's built to last. Find out more about Anvil at anvilbrewing.com. Again, that's anvilbrewing.com. And finally, my software, Beersmith. You can grab your free trial today at beersmith.com. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome two legends of home brewing, Jake Keeler and Michael Dawson. Both Jake and Michael are currently working for the Brewers Supply Group, or BSG, which is a major wholesale provider of all things homebrew. Jake is an AHA governing committee member and a Brewers Association board member. And Michael is a BJCP beer judge and on the editorial board for Brew Your Own magazine. Both are well known also for the role hosting Brewing TV several years back. It's great to have you guys both on the show. How you doing, Jake?
Doing well. Happy to be here.
And Michael?
I am also doing well, and I'm even happier to be here than Jake is. Thanks for talking to us, Brad.
You're happier than Jake, really?
It's going to be a competition, I think, for the next 45 minutes. We're sitting next to each other again.
Let's see. I got you. They're both sitting next to each other, although I got them on two cameras here. But yeah, Michael, it's great to have you here. You were on the show last summer, I think, right?
Yeah, that's right. During NHC, we had a good talk about sour beers.
Sour beers and your mom. How's your mom doing?
She's doing quite well. Thanks for asking. She still enjoys a good Berliner Weiss now and again.
And Jake, what are some of the things you've been working on lately?
Oh boy, a lot of stuff going on with the AHA, a lot of stuff going on with the Brewers Association, of course, everything here at BSG. So this tends to be a busy time of the year for us as we're creating some new resource and product guides for the different divisions and looking forward to the year and all the events that we're going to be doing. So staying busy.
Guys ready for NHC?
Sure.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. Okay, good. And Michael, you recently made a big stepping transition here. You moved from yeast over to BSG as well.
Yeah, I've came on board in January. Got tons of really sweet wood paneling here, and I'm loving it. It's been great to work with Jake again and kind of reform Voltron.
You guys are both in the same office now, or what?
Yeah. Oh yes.
Yeah. The entire marketing department here at BSG, we're actually working out of a mobile work trailer. As you can see, the fake wood paneling.
Is it a double wide or a single wide?
Oh, it is a single wide.
Single
wide.
Yeah.
I was thinking it was double wide, but maybe not.
I think the double refers to width, not length.
Well, that's why it's called double wide. I understand that.
Well, hopefully at some point you guys will get to a working location where you don't have wheels on it, right?
We are. We're actually moving into new offices across the street here on the RAR corporate campus. We're actually building a brand new distribution center which is going to be across the street. We'll move into the second floor of that. We are building a tech center and pilot brewery. And then we're also building a new malt house, which is just down the block from where we are right now.
Fantastic. That's really cool. Well, Jake, you sent me a note today saying you wanted to talk a little bit about ingredients. But before we get started on that, could you tell me a little bit about what are some of the recent trends you're seeing in homebrewing? I know you sit on the governing committee and I think the Brewers Association board as well.
Yeah. You know, some of the changes we're seeing now is that people are moving more and more towards all grain brewing, whether that's the typical 5, 10, 20 gallon setups, or it's the 3 gallon or 1 gallon brew in a bag setups. So no matter the technique or process, what we're seeing is a little less extract brewing and a little more brewing all grain. That's one of the major changes. I think also sour beers are becoming more and more popular, barrel aged beers. You know, people are still experimenting with crazy ingredients. So home brewing really is seeing no limits to the bounds of what it can do.
Awesome. And Michael, what do you think about the change from extract to all grain? We're now seeing, I think this year for the first time ever, a majority of people brewing all grain.
Yeah, you know, I think it's kind of a signifier of how sophisticated and technically savvy homebrewing has become. You know, I know since we all started, all grain was really the exception rather than the rule. Extract was kind of the default. And now that we're seeing that shift, I think it speaks to the focus on beer quality and customization that hobby brewers are interested in right now. Jake touched on kind of the diversification of brewing techniques as well. You know, when I started brewing, probably the same for you guys as well, all grain meant something very specific. It was fly sparging, usually like a 5 or 10 gallon batch. And now we've got 1 gallon, 3 gallon brew in a bag, batch sparging, you know, systems like the push button countertop brewing systems. You know, it means something different to different people. And it's hard to imagine 20 years ago that it could ever be like this. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, one of the cool things I think is we've got so much more information than we had 20 years ago as well. Yeah. It was a bit of a black art back then.
Yeah, and just access to the raw materials as well. You know, like I can remember Maris Otter being a pretty exotic and hard to find base malt. And now, you know, it's much easier to get a wide range of really high quality ingredients. So that has certainly helped as well.
Yeah, yeast has improved dramatically. Hop storage and so on has improved just dramatically over the last 20 years. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah, across the board. But, you know, however you're doing it, whether it's brewing a bag or fly sparging or pushing a button and watching work come out of a machine on your counter a few hours later, everybody's using the same raw materials. Everybody's making beer.
Cool. Well, Jake, tell us a little bit about how BSG fits into the homebrew market. I know, you know, a lot of homebrewers probably don't know that much about BSG or how it kind of fits in here.
Sure. So BSG, or Brew Supply Group, you know, to the beer market, we have two major divisions, craft brewing, which specifically deals with the commercial side of brewing. And then we have handcraft, which is selling the same exact ingredients along with some homebrew scale equipment and home winemaking ingredients, kits and equipment to homebrew retailers all across the U.S. So, you know, on the ingredient side, that's really our focus, malt, hops, yeast, processing aids, spices, botanicals, additives, oak alternatives, all those sorts of great things. The same stuff we sell for the craft brewers is the same stuff we sell on the homebrew side. So there are some malts that we sell only through craft brewing, but really right now in the last year or two, we've made a big push to make sure that those malts are available to homebrewers as well. in a smaller pack size. Also the hops, all the hops that we process out in our processing facility in Yakima, Washington, those are packed out at homebrew sizes as well, 1 ounce and 8 ounce packages. So that's really what we do. We're really focused on ingredients. As you can see back there, some logos of our major maltsters, Vireman, Rahr, Simpsons, along with Crisp, Malting Company of Ireland, Patagonia Malts, and some others as well.
And you guys are vertically integrated into the market too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. On the malt side, a bit, Brew Supply Group is a subsidiary of Rahr Corporation, which also owns Rahr Malting. So we're vertically integrated in that sense. And then also with our hop processing, we have direct contracts with growers around the world. We process those hops, as I said, out in Washington and sell those to the consumer. So we have vertical integration on those two pieces and a few others as well.
That's awesome. Well, Michael, since you just came out of the yeast industry, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what's going on and what's new in yeast.
Sure. Yeah. You know, Jake mentioned sour beers and barrel aged beers and things like that. Kind of touching back to our conversation last June, Brad, you know, it certainly has a lot of mind share, I guess, to use a phrase. It's those beers, I think, stand very large in the imagination and interest of craft brewers as well as craft drinkers. So we're seeing kind of an unprecedented range of lactic bacteria and Brettanomyces and other kind of non-traditional yeast strains and blends becoming available. Just in terms of sheer volume, though, you know, I think things like Chico and cleaner fermenting ale strains are still going to be bread and butter. Just to kind of draw on a recent experience, I was at a beer festival put on by the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild this past weekend, and all the breweries were there pouring specialty beers for Winterfest, and there were tons of sours. You know, just kind of in keeping with the amount of interest that those are generating, everybody has to have a sour. But by the same token, IPA is still king. You know, seasonal beers, you know, your pumpkin spiced beers or summer seasonals and things like that are still going to account for a lot of the volume, both on the craft beer side as well as for home brewers. So I think just in terms of sheer volume, that is what people are using day in and day out.
Sure. One of the other things I've noticed, we just published a new hop update for Beersmith. There's like 170, 180 different yeasts in it. And a lot of them are really from new labs that we hadn't seen before. I mean, a few years ago, there were really just two major producers of yeast, and now we're starting to see quite a few labs enter the market.
Yeah, there's lots of local startup labs, you know, and a lot of them are kind of geared toward more of those boutique sour yeast strains. So it's cool to see that diversity and range become available.
And the other thing I noticed, we're seeing some new packaging, of course. I think White Labs has a new package, right?
I've seen that on shelves, yeah. Yeah.
Pure Pitch, I think they call it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think Fermentis also has some new packaging. And I suspect you're going to see that as a lot of these companies realize there's a value in, you know, staying relevant and constant innovation. And it's really cool to see that come down to the homebrew level. That, you know, a lot of these ingredient manufacturers or suppliers, they realize that homebrewing is a critical part of the puzzle overall for beer. So that's really cool to see. I think the U.S. market, especially for homebrewing, has really made suppliers understand that they have built up the reputation of the industry and the hobby in the U.S. And it's really cool to see that recognition.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very cool. And yeast is also starting to expand in terms of quantity. We're starting to see some of them are actually putting together larger packages. And then, of course, there's a whole commercial yeast area as well. Do you guys do any work in yeast? I don't even know.
With BSG? We do. We do. Through our craft brewing division, we are the exclusive distributors of Fermentis dry yeast in the U.S. We also sell that yeast up in Canada. And then we sell several different dry yeast through our handcraft division, but primarily we focus a bit on Fermentis. You know, it's really interesting. There are so many choices for whether you're commercial or home brewer for the type of yeast you can use. And like Michael said, there are certain standbys that you can pretty much get from any yeast provider. They're going to be somewhat similar in their performance and their attenuation, flavor characteristics, and so forth. But then it's really interesting to see where, you know, homebrewers sort of sometimes drive the innovation because they're the ones demanding the crazy stuff, probably much more so than the commercial guys. Wouldn't you agree, Mike?
Yeah, I think so. And that was a point I was going to bring up later on. I know we've got more.
Bring it up now.
I'm going to bring it up now. Why wait? Life is short and uncertain. Yeah, you know, I think especially with the just the passion and knowledge base that a lot of really dedicated amateur brewers of sour beer bring to the table, the line between hobby and professional gets arguably at its most blurry in the realm of sour beers. There's definitely a lot of nerds, and I use that term in the most positive praiseworthy sense.
I don't know what you're talking about there.
there are a lot of hardcore nerds who are more hardcore and nerdy than me, brewing and doing amazing things with sour beer, and just our understanding of the microbes and how they contribute to the flavor fermentation of those beers.
Cool. Well, Jake, you mentioned we have a lot of new malts coming out as well. And yeah, that was a market that was kind of stagnant for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of that was due to interest. Simply, you know, a lot of maltsters around the world, you're going to have a certain amount of interest and volume requirements for them to produce and then send it overseas, obviously. And now that demand is here, brought about by the craft brewing explosion, but also by the demand of home brewers. You're also seeing some micro maltsters emerging around the U.S., quite a few, actually. Small-scale production, probably something more suited for tap rooms and brew pubs and whatnot.
Yeah, I interviewed one, I think it was last fall.
Okay.
I think they're up in Massachusetts, and they were, you know, malting their own beer. Malting their own, making their own malts, growing their own malts and malting them in-house and smoking them and all kinds of things.
Really cool. There's certainly a market and demand for that. You know, whether you're a craft brewer or home brewer, it's interesting to play with the malts and have that differentiation in the flavor profile, something you can't get, otherwise. But there's also a lot of new maltsters coming into the U.S. market from around the world that have been making malt for quite a long time. And then, you know, at least from our standpoint, we've introduced nearly the full line of Simpson's malts to the homebrew market. That was a new development. We've been introducing new lines from Patagonia malt. And then, of course, as the maltsters we work with introduce new malts into the market, we bring them to the homebrew market. So something like the Barkay malts from Vireman, Glen Eagles Maris Otter from Crisp. So it's really exciting. The maltsters understand that new malts are becoming as popular, as hot as the new hops. And a lot of brewers, whether it's on the commercial or homebrew side, are recognizing that the malt has that role to play within their recipe. It's not just this given. You're going to have a base malt, a couple crystal malts, and there you go. They're realizing that they can really make the unique flavor characteristics of their beer shine by using unique malts. It doesn't always have to be the hops. It doesn't always have to be the yeast.
Yeah, I know at one time, I think there was only like five or six different varieties of barley actually being grown in the United States. And I know that's expanded quite a bit recently. But.
Yeah, and there's a lot of research right now. There's different programs at different schools. There's a program with the University of Minnesota in joint with the University of Oregon and several other organizations and maltsters such as RAR working on identifying heritage varieties of barley, testing them for their agronomics, testing them for their yield, you know, could these be grown in the U.S.? Would they do okay? Winter barley varieties, for instance, are being tested at the U of M to see if they can produce a crop worthy of pursuing here in Minnesota. But also they're working with brewers to identify the flavor characteristics so that they can identify barleys that produce unique flavor characteristics, maybe some things that we haven't seen on the market before. So a lot of research going into that. It's really exciting.
Now, Michael, as we see people move into all grain brewing, are they starting to get beyond the traditional, you know, pale and crystal and roasted malts and get into some of the more exotic stuff?
I think, yes. You're never just kind of like with the IPA and things like that, you know, you're never going to completely go away from the basics, you know, classic base malts like Pilsner and Munich and English pale malts are always going to be in fashion, and can't make a good stout without roasted barley of some type. But I think, you know, like Jake was mentioning, the research and development that's being done on new barley varieties and kind of the returned emphasis or interest in varietals, whether that's hops or barley, you know, I was reading this really good piece on beer terroir, you know, the expression of the growing conditions in the land. Barley is really a fantastic way to explore that. And I think, you know, the interest and prominence of smash beers recently, single malt and single hop, kind of speaks to people's interest in exploring that. You know, barley that's grown in Germany is going to be different than the same type that's grown in, you know, a more maritime English climate, which will be different than one that's grown in the high plains of the United States. And so factoring that expression of the agriculture and the land and how that influences the plants that we ferment and brew with, it's a pretty fascinating realm of exploration for brewers, whether home or pro.
I'll add something to that. Sure. You know, one trend I think you're starting to see is that whether home brewers or craft brewers, you know, reducing the complexity of the grist bill in the recipe and letting those malts kind of speak for themselves and let those flavor characteristics shine a little bit more instead of muddle them all up with like seven different crystal malts. I think that's a trend where people are understanding that, you know, if working with the proper malts, quality malts, and using them, brewing with them in the correct fashion can yield some pretty amazing things. And you don't have to throw in, you know, seven different types. Maybe you can reduce it down to four or three. I'd say probably same with hops, you know, realizing that there's a lot you can do with a single varietal or two varietals that maybe you used to think you could only achieve by putting seven different hops in it.
Yeah, I think simplicity is certainly a trend in home brewing. And I think a lot of that's actually, some of that's being driven from the commercial side as well. You don't have, typically a small brewer doesn't have 50 different kinds of hops and malts laying around, you know?
Correct.
A lot of classic beer styles were built around one very specific regional barley or malt product. You know, like Pilsner was brewed with Pilsen malt. Vienna lager was created with Vienna malt, you know, and whatever hops would have been grown in the region. Like these classic styles are classics for a reason. And they're, like Jake very astutely pointed out, they were not complicated recipes. Good job.
Still got it.
Never lost it.
So, yeah, I've noticed as you get into smash brewing too, if you just open it up from one ingredient to just two types of malt, for example, you can brew almost all the styles in the BJCP style guide with just two malts.
Sure.
Yeah. So, okay, well, Jake, you tell me you also been working with some new packaging and hops. What's different about the new packaging, and what are some of the things you're doing in hops for homebrewers?
You know, the quality of the packaging is more or less the same as what we had before, except our pellet density is much better. We have a new processing plant in Washington, and you know, we're going to be releasing some video about how our pellet density, we think it's superior than others, so be on the lookout for that. But
you're both going to be in the video, right?
Maybe our hands might be in the video.
touching
things. But we've improved the packaging.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, exactly. We've improved the packaging a bit. We went away from a 1 pound package to an 8 ounce package because we felt that was more appropriate to what homebrewers wanted to see and what they were going to use. Speaking from personal experience, it's very rare I'd buy a one pound package and use the entire thing. I'd have to then seal it up, put it away. So 8 ounces is a little bit more realistic. And we're trying to introduce a lot of the new varieties. Whether if we're bringing them into craft brewing, we want to bring them into the homebrew market as well, you know, based on their availability. But, you know, hops is a big area of focus for us. Our hops are as good as anybody else's. We control the process. We have the relationship with the growers. We bring the hops in. We process them in our own facility. So having that firsthand experience and touch with the product is really important to us, making sure that it's a high quality product for the home brewer.
Yep. And Michael, is there anything you want to add there on hops?
I agree with what Jake said. I can use a pound of hops in pretty short order, but I might be a statistical anomaly that way. I think the 8 ounce pack size is much more applicable, especially, you know, for folks who may be brewing smaller batch sizes.
Have you guys been playing with any of the new varieties, either one of you?
I have a beer that I'm going to put on tap here at the RAR Beer Stube, hopefully later this week. That's it was almost a smash beer. It was a single hop with Idaho 7.
Idaho 7.
Those are going to be, it's a new experimental variety from, as the name might suggest, Idaho. Those are going to be available to homebrew customers later this spring, I believe in April.
I think so.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But it's a fun hop. It's a really nice blend of tropical fruit and juicy fruit gum and some kind of pronounced pine aromatics. It kind of reminded me of Mosaic and how multifaceted it was. It can smell like one thing in one moment and something rent the next. It's pretty fun to work with.
Yeah, I haven't heard about Idaho 7, so that's a new one for me.
It's pretty new. It's was just released last year, and it was in a handful of kind of tap room only releases from some commercial breweries last year. Sierra Nevada did one. Sockeye in Boise did one, and I think Victory.
Their 20th anniversary ale came out not too long ago, uses Idaho 7.
Awesome. Well, Michael, I've seen a lot of interest in all grain brewers on controlling their water profile and also controlling their mash pH. It seems to be a huge amount of activity in this area. Is that something BSG's interested in working on?
Do you mean like coming to your house and stirring calcium chloride into your
mat? Would be great. I'm sure lots of guys love for you to come to their house and measure their water profile, you know.
It would probably add a lot to the cost of what would otherwise be a pretty small salt addition. But yeah, we could probably do that.
Maybe you could both go out as a team and do water profiles.
he's not a cheap date. Neither am I for that.
Is that true?
In fairness.
It's true.
I had to buy him like a $7 Burger King meal last week.
I have needs.
$7, huh?
I guess that was only 50% of the total bill, so maybe he's not that bad.
We do quite a bit of work on the craft brewing side. We have a lot of products that we sell into that to craft brewers to deal with water treatment, water chemistry. Some of those same ingredients and processing aids we package down for home brewers. But it's an interesting area because it's always been, you know, it seems like it's always been a small subset of mm-hmm. brewers that get to that point where they start messing with water chemistry in their recipes. Although arguably everyone should, at the very least understand what their local water profile is, because it, you could brew with the best malts, the best hop, the best yeast. But if your water profile's off for that particular style, it's probably not going to turn out the way you want it to. Then we see that happen plenty on the craft brewer and craft brew side.
Even, you know, just as far as the mechanics of the brew day, I joke about calcium chloride, but I'm a pretty firm believer in it, at least for when I brew with St. Paul water, because I see improved efficiency, enzymatic performance in the mash. It helps with yeast flocculation. So, you know, with very soft St. Paul water, I definitely see benefit from calcium additions, and I wouldn't understand that if I didn't also understand the local water. So once again, good job, Jake. You made an excellent point. I was going to say, after I was done joking around about Burger King and flying to people's houses, I was going to say that BSG does have a full complement of water salts and pH adjustment chemicals and things like that. It's the same stuff that we offer to pro brewers. Like Jake said, it's packaged down and available to home brewers as well. And the fact that there are more people who are cognizant of this stuff and its influence on the finished product, I think is another bellwether of how sophisticated and technically savvy homebrewing has become. It was much more complicated in the days before the Beersmith software to,
of course,
figure out those salt additions. And I'm being totally sincere about that. You know, it was a lot of back of napkin algebra. And being on the phone with your municipal water department. But that, again, you know, like, it's accessibility of information and availability of that knowledge has, I think, helped make a lot better homebrew.
Yeah, I've noticed a big change. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, nobody would have asked me about their mash pH or water profiles or anything like that. Now I get quite a few questions on it. Jake, what are your thoughts?
I agree, and I think it is. I think you guys bring up a good point that it's likely a result of the information being on the internet and more awareness. You know, it seems like people for the longest time cared about hops, and that's it. And then it was maybe malt, and then they started thinking more about fermentation, and you know, the logical next step is water. And to have a firm understanding of all four of those components is really what you need to probably brew the beer, the best beer that you can brew, you know, regardless of process and equipment and whatnot. So it makes total sense that as more knowledge is shared and there's a wider acceptance that homebrewing is in part embracing all of those aspects, not just one or two of them, that we're going to see more interest in that. And hopefully that drives innovation and that drives even more awareness and information for homebrewers.
Well, Jake, I know many of the local homebrew shops were struggling with sales last year as more people have switched to buying online. Have you seen that trend continue? I know you guys are in the wholesale business, but...
You know, the market's softened certainly for the past couple years. I think it's a multitude of factors. You know, one of it is that we came out of a recession where homebrewing was very popular. People were putting more time into their hobbies. They were saving money by homebrewing. And it just gained a lot of popularity. It was the right place, right time, right circumstances. I think as the economy has recovered, people are going back to work. They have more disposable income, so they have more money and less time on their hands. And they also have a wider variety and access to craft beer. So those are some multiple factors that may play into people not necessarily stop. They don't stop homebrewing. They just maybe do it a little less frequently. And so stores kind of struggle with that, right? So there's also a lot of stores that just didn't evolve along with those changing trends, and they struggled a little bit too. But there's plenty of success stories out there. We talk to shops all the time, all around the country, that are still experiencing really healthy growth. They're having people come into their store every week to, you know, begin the hobby. Their classes are filling up. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a natural sort of correction to the growth, but I I don't think anybody should be, you know, claiming that the sky is falling or that, you know, the hobby or the activity is going away. It's here to stay. And it as any, like any hobby and activity, it's going to have natural fluctuations. And we just kind of have seen a little bit of the downward trend and it'll come back up.
Yeah, we've seen a good example here. I got a local homebrew store that changed management, and when they changed management, they also changed their philosophy, and the store has been dramatically more successful since then.
It's kind of the elephant in the room, but a lot of these homebrew shop owners, they started the business many, many years ago, and they may have been in the end of their career or even the end of their interest and passion for the hobby. And that kind of reflected in the way the store operated, the way they interacted with customers, how the store evolved to change towards the new customers and the new generation of brewers out there. But the shops that have that new blood and they're invigorated and they're driven, they're doing great. They're doing great. So I think it's basically, you know, the success of the market and the success of the industry is going to be driven by the motivation of the players involved. And if everybody's motivated to see this thing stay healthy, it will.
Yeah, this place was pretty amazing. You'd walk in and half the bins would be empty. And you go, you know, do you have some Munich malt? Oh, yeah, I got some in the back. And I'm like, well, why don't you fill the bin up, you know? But the new management has a totally different approach on that.
Yeah.
Michael, your thoughts on the local homebrew store? I assume you support your local homebrew store.
I do. I will admit to ordering online from some shops when I can't find something locally, but I'm fortunate enough to live within driving distance of several shops and biking or a long walk of at least one. So it's good to see a local shop doing well, and when we're out and about at different events throughout the country and visiting accounts. Like Jake said, there are shops doing well across the country, and I agree with the assessment that homebrewing isn't going anywhere. The people that really love it, that are into it as not just a lifestyle but a passion and a hobby, are going to continue doing it no matter what. And with that kind of customer base, there will always be a place for a well-run shop.
I think also I want to add that I think what we're seeing too with a new generation is that they may tend to approach homebrewing more as just an activity. It's an activity they do along with a lot of other activities, but they may not be, you know, the kind of individuals who are going to join a club or, you know, spend a ton of time at the shop, but they're going to homebrew. And they may homebrew very frequently, but they just see it as an activity just like anything else. And I think the shops and those of us in the industry that have started to recognize that are starting to cater to that mentality. And I think when Mike and I both worked on the retail side of things, homebrewing was a hobby. It was a lifestyle. And those were the majority of the people that got into it. But that was a different time. That was a different mentality towards the act of homebrewing. And so it's shifting a little bit. And so if stores can figure that out, they make sure that their shop caters to the uber wonk who belongs to several different clubs and competes in beer competitions.
You mean like Michael, right?
Yeah, like Michael. but then can also, you know, shift gears and have products and a tone and a conversation with people that are more casual about it. I think those are the shops that are going to do really well, because homebrewers are not a homogenous bunch. It pulls from all walks of life, and the more that shops recognize that and they cater to that diversity, I think the better they're going to be.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of people move in and out of homebrewing too. As you know, you have kids, life changes, and you get out of it for a while. You come back to it a couple of years later. That seems to be the trend I've noticed, anyways.
Absolutely.
Well, Michael, we recorded a great episode on doing a Berliner Weiss at NHC last year, and you've touched on sour beers quite a bit. I just thought I'd ask you if you have any thoughts on some of the new things happening in sour beer brewing.
Since we've talked, I don't think the fever or appreciation for the kettle souring process has diminished at all. If anything, that's kind of picking up steam. Just to go back to that.
Yeah, I actually mentioned it to a couple commercial brewers a couple weeks ago when I was out visiting a brewery, and they were looking to get into sour beers. I said, here's how you do it. This is probably the easiest way, you know.
Yeah, a lot of commercial brewers especially are using that approach, and for home brewers as well, you know, who want to turn around a sour beer in a short amount of time with minimal risk of cross-contaminating the rest of your equipment with a lactic bacteria. It's just such a quick and easy way to do it. You know, so there's tons of continued interest in that. A lot of folks playing with Brettanomyces and alternative fermentations. Another trend, you know, spontaneous fermentation, you know, just kind of like exposing wort to environmental air or atmospheric air.
And throw it in the backyard, right?
Backyard, you know, folks have been fabricating their own cool ships and things like that, and just kind of like using local yeast, which is kind of the ultimate expression of terroir.
That sounds so cool. What
does terroir mean?
So it's a French term that I'm most familiar being used with wine, and it's the expression of the climate and the vineyard soil and all the other environmental factors, all of the nature and nurture expressed in the fruit. You know, so a grape that's grown in a really chalky soil might have kind of a chalky expression in the glass. You know, if it was really hot and dry that season, you know, the sugars and the tannins and everything might be really concentrated and make for a really intense Hybrix must. You know, and so for beer, which is still an agricultural product, but goes through
more processing.
You know, they say wine is made in the vineyard, but beer is really made in the brew house. You get your raw materials, but then, you know, like your mash temperature, your mash viscosity, your mash pH, you know, when you add the hops, the temperature that you run your fermentation at, whether you filter or not, like all the choices that you actually make, like you said, Jake, in the processing have a huge impact on the finished product. But, you know, if we can kind of minimize the impact of those brew house factors and then like let, whether it's your local yeast or your land race hops or your heirloom barley that you're using in your smash beer, just kind of shine through, then you get beer terroir. But so, you know, the spontaneous, fermentation thing, you know, whether it's on a commercial scale or a homebrew scale is really fascinating. And it's kind of a high wire act because, you are surrendering a lot of that process control to just the microflora in the air. You know, and I've tasted some really interesting, really good things made that way. And I've also tasted some pretty rugged things, made that way because, you know, what is your blend of enteric bacteria to wild yeast going to be? What is what's the wild yeast going to taste like? Is it going to be super phenolic or smoky? Is it going to conk out at 4% alcohol? You know, it's a really interesting field of exploration, and that's, you know, getting into some pretty heavy duty microbiology. And that's why I was saying before, you know, that's kind of where that realm, maybe where the hobby, the really expert hobby practitioners crossing over into the realm of professional starts to dissolve a little bit. And that's
guys like Jake, right?
Guys like Jake.
Just like me.
He's just like a walking petri dish over there.
I don't know if that's a good thing or not. That's
well, it depends on what kind of microflora he's carrying around. We could just drop him in some uninoculated wort and see what happens. It's Keeler terroir.
That's one of the things I like, though. The wine people, they have these fancy, you know, French terms to describe everything, and we use terms like phenolic, you know.
But there again, that speaks to the kind of the more scientific process with which we approach brewing, right? You know, the processing, the sacrification of the wort, the inoculation of the wort with yeast. You know, I respect and admire the scientific rigor that can be brought to the brewing process. But it's cool to see things like spontaneous fermentation and wild and sour beers and crazy barrel aged things kind of pushing back on that a little bit and making sure that the art of brewing is given weight as well as science.
Yeah, I think that's one of the challenges as the brewing sciences have developed over the last 20 years. You know, you got guys like John Palmer and a lot of kind of engineers driving the process as opposed to the artists. And I think that that's reflected in a lot of the terminology we even use.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I would argue that there's a lot of artists out there as well. Ale Apothecary outside Bend, Oregon does a lot of spontaneously fermented and house culture beers. Santa Darius in Santa Cruz, Black Project. You know, there's a lot of really exciting beers being made with you know, I don't want to say a non-scientific process or without any process control at all, but kind of letting that art fly a little more.
Yeah, so that's why I enjoy talking with folks like Randy Mosher too. He's a, you know, sure, he's a graphic artist, and he just approaches things from a whole different perspective there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fun and exciting approach to brewing, I think, to a little more raku pottery. You don't quite know what you're going to get, and it can be very exciting.
And Jake, your thoughts on the art and science of beer brewing?
You know, I think that as long as there's an understanding and basis in science so that you understand what the factors are, it's sort of like an artist understanding a color palette or understanding how the surface is going to work, and then being able to move it towards a more experimental level. I think the best results are when there's a basis of understanding, there's a basis of formal training, in this case, maybe science of fermentation. You know, then I think that lends itself to making good decisions about what you experiment on. Right, making a somewhat informed decision on what you experiment on. So it's not a total crapshoot. And I think that for homebrewers, it really doesn't matter because you're making this for yourself. If it doesn't turn out well, you've only got yourself to disappoint. Of course, for a commercial brewery, you know, you got to produce something that people are going to buy, that people are going to consume. So there's a little more skin in the game for that. But nevertheless, if home brewers and breweries don't push the boundaries, I think it's almost that is an American craft beer. That's not what has happened over the last 40 to 50 years, and especially in the last 10 to 15. So I think that too much science is not good. Too much art is probably not good either. You know, the sweet spot is somewhere in between. And maybe one has a little bit more of a pole position on the other, but it goes back and forth. Those are really the beers being made, whether they're being made by home brewers or they're being made by commercial brewers. I think those are the ones that hit that sweet spot.
Awesome. We probably could go on for quite a long time, but we're coming to the end of the time. I was wondering if there's anything else, Michael, is there anything else you'd like to add? Any final thoughts on ingredients or art and science of brewing?
I agree. We could I could talk about this stuff all day. So we'll have to save it for next time. I just wanted to say thanks for having us on, Brad, and thanks to Jake for sitting next to me here in the sweet wood paneling office.
Yeah, I've been dying to have you guys on together. So this is really nice having you both back together. And yeah, I'm thrilled that you guys are both working for BSG now together as well.
Yeah, it's exciting. Absolutely. And Mike, as you said, just came on this January. So he's already had a huge impact on our projects and getting along great with everybody here. So a lot of excitement about some of the stuff we're working on. And You know, Mike and I will both be at the Craft Brewers Conference. We'll also both be at the National Homebrewers Conference.
It's in Philadelphia this year is
Craft Correct. Brewers. Correct. CBC is in Philadelphia. And then the Homebrew Con is out in Baltimore. So we'll be at both events. So if you see us out there, please come say hi. We'd love to talk to you about brewing and about ingredients. And
hopefully I have you both on the podcast. We can do one on the show floor maybe again.
That'd be a lot sure. Fun. Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
There's Burger King in our rider, Brad.
I'll spring for the Burger King. I can do that.
Done.
You're in, huh?
Yep. That's all it took. You had me a burger. Could have been White Castle, Wendy's, McDonald's.
I don't know. They have White Castle in Baltimore? I really don't know. I thought that was a little farther north.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll have to look into that.
We'll get back to you. We'll do some Googling.
I know Maryland has Burger King, so we could certainly do that. You got to be a little careful where you go in Baltimore, you know?
Yep.
Omar Stepanyo.
Omar what?
I guess you guys haven't seen The Wire.
I've seen The Wire.
No, I haven't seen it. What's going on?
Omar Stepanyo. I robs drug dealers. We'll talk about that on site in June. give you a chance to watch four seasons or so.
Okay, that sounds good. Anyways, it's great having you both on the show. Thanks again for being here. Michael?
Thank you for having us, Brad. Look forward to doing this again.
And Jake?
Thank you, Brad. It's always a pleasure.
It's great having my distinguished guests again today, Michael Dawson and Jake Keeler. I've had both of them on before. I encourage you to go back and look at some of those old episodes. They're both from the Brewer Supply Group now, and it's a great pleasure having you guys on the show. Thanks again.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to Michael Dawson and Jake Keeler for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine, where you can get your 15% discount on their magazine or anything in their store if you use the offer code BEERSMITH2016 when you shop at beerandbrewing.com. Again, use the offer code BEERSMITH2016 and get your subscription now at beerandbrewing.com. And also Anvil, the new line of brewing equipment from Blickman Engineering. Kettles, burners, and accessories that are built to last. Get durable, reliable, high-quality brewing equipment with Anvil at anvilbrewing.com. Again, that's anvilbrewing.com. And finally, Beersmith Software, the industry standard for home and professional brewers that lets you design great beer recipes and brew with confidence. Download your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I encourage you to subscribe. We're available on iTunes, YouTube, and streaming 24/7 at beersmith.com/radio. And of course, you can find every episode on my blog at beersmith.com/blog. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.